feel like I sometimes say this too much, and it's probably nothing more than a reflection of how many years we've been doing this crap.
We call it quality content, Bob.
Well, it is quality content, I think, for us at least. And I mean, look, it. I don't know about you, but I do this show for my interest, not for the audiences. I couldn't care less what they think, or you, for that matter.
I'm well aware of that.
But this is a guy I could talk to every day.
Yeah.
And I've respected him as a coach since I, you know, became aware of him, really aware of him. And then, you know, when he was, I talked to him several times before he got to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but when he was with the Maple Leafs, we didn't talk a lot, but a couple times a year. And I was always really impressed and fascinated by the guy. And I've gotten to know him, both of us, know him a little bit at least. And now we get a chance to talk to him again as he is he the latest to take a head coaching job?
Yes. Yeah.
I guess by a day or two.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice is back in the business after surprisingly leaving the Winnipeg Jets last year. He has taken over the reins of the Florida Panthers. Probably, he may disagree, but probably the best team he's ever inherited. But a team that still needs work in order to get to the promised land, which is, of course, the Stanley Cup. Although, you know, based on their regular season performance this year, you'd say they're pretty close, and they might very well be. But we'll find out what the new head coach thinks about this team and what he's planning on doing, if he's formulated a plan, or at least a skeleton plan. Paul Maurice, new head coach of the Florida Panthers, after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon back with you, and here's a face we haven't seen for a little while. I mean, John and I haven't for a little while, but it's been too long. Paul Maurice, named in the last few days as the new head coach of the Florida Panthers, and he joins us to chat a little bit about this. Well, congratulations, first
Thanks.
Of all.
Thanks
so much for the extended vacation. Did you contemplate the possibility at all of at least not going back into coaching right away?
Yeah, it was, there wasn't a plan in so many ways, Bob. Like I didn't say, hey, I'm going to get back into coaching. What's available? Florida's available. That's not what happened. I was completely comfortable if my phone didn't ring. And there were a couple of calls. And the truth was, you know, after the conversation, we both agreed that they had other candidates. And I was completely comfortable that I wouldn't be part of the process, kind of pull yourself out. And then Florida called, you know, and I'm driving down the road with my wife. The phone comes up on the screen on the nav. And I don't know the number, but I answer it. And it's Bill Zito, who I have no previous relationship with. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm just checking in to see what you're at, what you're thinking about coaching and if you had interest. And the words out of my mouth were, I'm interested in the Florida Panthers. And it was before, it was just the truth, right? I hadn't given it much thought, but clearly you follow teams, you see what's going on. But when I came down, so we talked, we had, you know, a real good Zoom call with Bill and Roberto Luongo. So, you know, great guys to talk to. And you get down here and you meet and you get into the group. And I think we did 5 hours the first day and the next one was 10 hours and didn't run out of things to talk to. And by the end of that meeting, I'm not just down here to answer questions. I want the job, right? Watch these guys work. It was nonstop hockey conversations and questions and sharing of experiences. And these guys are on it, right? Like they're aggressive in the way they're thinking. They're very passionate about it. So it's infectious. And then what happens is you go from not really thinking about coaching to being right back in it, but feeling like you fit the way it's supposed to feel.
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited.
So what's the timeline, Paul? I mean, when did Billy call you?
About 10 days ago, I think.
Wow. So this is quick.
And there were no previous calls. There's no earlier relationship. So they had done an internal process, and then I think the word Bill used that they felt it would be prudent to reach out and talk to some other people. I know that they did, and it was quick. Yeah, I made the call, and I think instead of necessarily going seven different coaches, let's say, interviewing at the same time, they kind of blocked off and said, okay, we'll talk to this guy. So it was pretty intense.
I'm intrigued. You know, you mentioned what, 15 hours or so of meetings over those 2 days. What I know you don't want to get too specific, but share with us, if you will, the kinds of things you talk about in a generic sense. And are they, do they tend to be, you've been through this process before,
right?
Do they tend to be the same kinds of conversations, regardless of the team, regardless of the time?
No, you know what? And now I'll go back into history. There was 1 year that I interviewed with seven teams, and it was the year, I'm going to say before the 2004 lockout. That's what it was. So after all the interviews, I got all these calls back and said, we just find out we're probably going to be locked out, so we're not hiring a coach. But I was really amazed at how different. That was my first real process, because there was no interview with Jim Rutherford. I turned the job down three times in Hartford, and he said, okay, you may never get another chance. And then I took it. That was, we had had a previous relationship. So that was my first, and they are all completely different. I mean, what would be maybe true of all of them? You start with family, right? What's your situation? Tell me about your kids, your life experience there, where are you from? All those kind of things. And then they start, and it's either, and some guys will be very detailed, and there's video. They'll have video questions about, this is our team. This is, you know, I actually, Garth Snow, you remember that name?
Yeah, sure.
In the island a long time ago, he had an awful lot of video prepared. He wanted questions answered about the systems and the style that his team was playing. And then some of them are more general. This one was in depth about even specific situations. So we had this situation, Paul, happen here this year. How would you handle it? Or have you ever had an experience that would relate to this? What do you think you would do in this? And so you tell your story, and you've been around a little while now. I've got maybe a couple of stories to tell with that real world. This is what I did with this. This is the way I think this should be handled. And that usually takes you off into another tangent, and you're an hour on that, and you kind of come back to the middle and say, okay, this is, you know. So Bill had a whole list of questions that he had prepared that we went through with no real timeline. Just answer the question. If it took an hour, away you go.
Yeah, but the reality of it is, though, with Bill and Roberto, you're the senior member. You've been around the NHL longer than both of those two guys have. You know there's a lot more skeletons in this league. Not to say that they're bad skeletons, but you know the way of the world in this league more than they do.
Well, I think maybe a way to look at it, though, is, and this is what I enjoyed, three completely unique perspectives on that world. So Bill Zito, as a base and an agent, and geez, you're seeing an awful lot of agents come now into the general manager. I don't think it's necessarily a trend. It may be a necessity based on all the cap issues and these guys having such an expertise in that. And then Roberto, just a brilliant career as a goaltender. And goaltenders always, again, have an even more unique perspective than players. So, yeah, I've got more experience in them in coaching all day long. But I really enjoyed Bill's intellect and his way of phrasing questions and his way of seeing things. It's different. Everybody has their own style, but part of that 10 hours is it was easy to talk, right? It was an easy flow of information.
So we've all gone through interviews, and I don't think this would be dramatically different, a coaching interview, but how many questions did you have? How much was it Paul Maurice interviewing the Florida Panthers rather than the Florida Panthers interviewing Paul Maurice?
So I would say the start of it, when I got here, I didn't necessarily come down for the interview. I came down to answer questions. I almost viewed it like you're coming in as a consultant. They're going to put a bunch of issues that they had on the board, and you're going to try to help them solve those issues. And then I would ask as many questions about how they felt it should have been handled, or what they would have wanted to see, maybe something to, or their plan for something. What are you going to try to do if A doesn't happen? What's B and C? I had an awful lot of questions with that. But I do think there's an emotional component to this. When you sit in a room for that long, you get a feeling. Now, you always got to guard that you don't just get excited about a job. But I didn't have that necessarily excitement that I had to get back to work. Mm-hmm. But you do get kind of an excitement about that fit. I don't have a better word, whether a belief then that you could work in this environment very well for whatever the coaching window is on Paul Maurice with the Florida Panthers. You want to feel like you can And I felt that right away. Like I was like energized 10 minutes in and going and excited. And it was completely organic, right? I wasn't trying to be positive. I wasn't trying to be upbeat or sell a different personality. I came in, we started talking, and we're in a full hockey lather 10 minutes into the conversation.
So I'd love to know, after that first five-hour session, you walk out, you phone your wife. What do you tell her?
So I reserve judgment after my first 5 hours. Okay, because I like the conversation. I thought this is really good. I said, you know, I think it went well. We got tomorrow's the big day and we'll have at it. But I'll let you in on something personal. You know, I called her after the 10-hour one and she said, man, I haven't heard you this excited in a long time. It's nice. So it was pretty exciting. And this, that has nothing to do with my Winnipeg experience. My Winnipeg experience was absolutely brilliant. I just got to the point that I knew that I wasn't the guy anymore. And that started to drive me crazy, right? Coaches have a window. I believe that. I unless you're winning Stanley Cups or you're taking over a developmental program, an expansion idea, you're going to go in and every situation is different. But 9 years in Canada, and it's an intense market, certainly going through the Canadian division, it's kind of a mini playoff game every single night. When you start to feel, and I critique my own performance, I wasn't anywhere, I don't even know if I'd say I wasn't anywhere as good. I wasn't effective anymore, right? Like you're pushing the buttons and you're just not getting as much coffee out of the machine. Yeah. So that starts to wear on you. And I don't know if it's because I get older. It wore on me more than it ever has before. Like you get there, I'm not getting it done here. And we talked about it in the summer and I probably made a mistake of not doing it then, but I love those guys. Yeah. I love that team and that city, and I want them to win. So you want to stay in the fight, and it just wasn't right.
So when did you? Because this was actually going to be my next question, is when did you stop being a Winnipeg Jet?
Yeah, I haven't. I truly, John, I haven't. I stopped being the right guy for the Jets somewhere between the bubble, and the end. I do think though, we did really, really good work, you know, beat a team like Edmonton in the playoffs and our defense was a little leaner, but we added, you know, Kevin added two really good pieces on that blue line. And I still couldn't.
You're still saying we, by the way.
Well, I'm not lying to you. I love that place.
Yeah,
I do. They have just incredible. It was so good for me and my family, right? My kids kind of finished their high school there. That was their launch pad. It's just a good place. And that was a part of it. Part of what was driving me so crazy was I couldn't get it done for people that I cared about.
Yeah.
And it affected me like it has never affected me before, and I needed to get off the bench.
Well, here's a truth that you already are well aware of, and I've been through it. John, I think to a slightly lesser extent, you could not possibly go from one place to another place and make a greater geographical change. And... a greater meteorological change.
Oh my goodness.
Like you're going from minus 30 to like plus 30 on a cool day.
Right. Average median daily temperature over the course of 12 months in Florida is 24 degrees Celsius.
There you go. Well, so talk about, was that important to you? Because at some point it has to have some relevance, but I'm not sure in your profession, it really meant a whole lot.
No. So not in the profession, but I was at the point that I started to consider more than the profession before I took the job. So the other stories to this are, I mean, God, it's as tough as winters I've ever had in my entire life, right? Like in the people of Winnipeg, it was.
And your home.
Oh my goodness. Right. And isn't that the truth, right? At least you can get on a plane and go to LA every once in a while, right? And you come home and your life's stuck and go, what are you worried about? Hey, it's fine. So what's funny about that, and the Florida Panthers aren't and never were on my radar till the phone rang. But in March, my son comes in, my youngest comes in and said, hey, I just got accepted into the University of Florida, University of Miami of Florida. And I'm thinking, yes, right? Like he goes there, I got a place to go in the winter.
Sure.
But I don't say anything because, you know, you don't want to. I don't want to push him. He's got to get into a bunch of schools. Pick the one that's best for you. We love you. Go ahead. Yeah. And then he said, I'm going to, he went down and visited, came back. He said, absolutely. I'm going to school in Florida. So now my youngest is going to Florida before I am. And then this thing just kind of comes together. So it is. It's out of the blue.
That's perfect, huh?
There's not a lot of President's Trophy teams looking for coaches the next year. Like, all of these pieces fit, and I end up in this room, and now I get to keep part of my family together a little longer.
I want to address that too. Sorry, John. It probably would have been my first question, but we kind of got diverted.
We tend to do that with Paul, by the way.
This is the best team probably that you've ever inherited, for lack of a better term.
Correct.
You had a Carolina team that was pretty good. But as you alluded to, this almost never happens. 99% of the coaching availabilities in any professional sport are with teams that are horseshit, to put it bluntly.
Right.
They're underachievers. They haven't performed well. That's what they're looking, you know, that's why they make a coaching change. You're walking into a situation that is extraordinarily rare, where you've got a team that actually had serious Stanley Cup aspirations in this past year. You know, probably not experienced enough. That probably killed them. You know, how they got slotted in the schedule didn't help them in the playoffs. But how different is this for you, as you thought about it, than what you would normally be looking at?
Well, you're 100% right. So when you go into Hartford, they've never in their history won a 7-game playoff series. They don't.
There you go.
And I think they'd missed the playoffs for 3 or 4 years going in. When we come to Winnipeg, they hadn't won a playoff game as a franchise going back to the Atlanta days. So you're starting from scratch, right? So, and that's part of this. And then that's part of what I'm talking about, that coach's window, because you're going to, and burn isn't the right word, but you're going to spend the first 3 years developing, bringing kids in, getting pounded, learning your lesson. So there's a cost in some ways to the coach, right? You've got this kind of finite amount of energy and to give, and you burn that chunk at the front, and you hope you can stick around long enough to be good when they get good. And that happened in both teams. We won the conference in Carolina, and then we went to the conference final in Winnipeg. And now I'm stepping into a place where they're at a different place in their development. So a different set of circumstances and challenges. And that's part of why Bill had brought Q in, and they just felt for this leg, they needed a veteran guy. So we've got some challenges coming up here, right? We've got a little bit of, some issues, if you would, with the cap as all teams, but we've got some things we got to deal with there. We're going to have to bring some kids in. And there's also going to be an expectation, certainly, 122 points, score more goals than anybody else. What's interesting about that, and this is not a knock, they earned every one of those points, but they finished about fourth in regulation wins in the Eastern Conference, right? So it's 16 points, 13 points in overtime, 3 points, I think, in a shootout. And there's no overtime, 3-on-3 in shootouts don't happen in the playoffs. So this is now an opportunity, but also what's needed is a real playoff focus in terms of style of play that we can build on and work on all year. And that will take, it's going to be a challenge, right? You don't want to, what did I say yesterday? You don't want to put mud tires on a Ferrari, right? You don't want to come in and clamp down on these guys. You want them to be good.
You were going to say snow tires, weren't you?
Well,
you were going to say snow tires.
but I think you got to learn that, we've got to learn how to drive in some inclement weather, right? We've got to learn how to handle the adversity that comes only in some ways in the playoffs. You got to sometimes manufacture that in the regular season. So there's some challenges here as well.
What happens to Andrew Burnett? Because we know
right.
Listen, we're thrilled for you.
Okay.
You're our friend.
Right. I appreciate that.
We are happy that you're back. You've always been great to us, but with every victory comes a defeat for someone. Right.
For sure. So first of all, the door is very open for Andrew. So he did meet with Bill before I was announced, and they had that conversation. He had been given permission quite a bit earlier if he wanted to look around, just in case they didn't want to put him in a difficult spot. Two of my closest coaching friends, and so I don't know Andrew Burnett,
right,
but two of my closest coaching friends in hockey are very close friends with him. So the door is open. I am interested in certainly a discussion of having, I think it could be very, very good from my point of view and from the Panthers' point of view. The question is then, he's a proud guy and he's got some skills for sure. He'll have to make an assessment if that is interesting to him. And when that time comes, we're absolutely, if he has any interest, we're going to sit down and talk and see if, so I've reached out and also had my friends reach out to say, at the very least, there's an opportunity for you to work with somebody we think could be great together. Mm-hmm. And, but I'm, you know, going to be completely respectful of the time he would need to take to think about it and make a decision. There's no hurry on that on our end for him.
It's only been a few days, but I'm intrigued. Have you called any of the players? Have any of the players called you?
Yeah. So I started that, the press conference yesterday at the start, and then, you know, the media requirements, I kind of went dark there for about 6 months. I didn't feel it was appropriate for me to be doing interviews in the town that I just left the bench of. So I didn't. So I owe a whole bunch of people, right? A lot of people said, hey, would you come on and talk about the playoffs? And I just said, no. So that was all day yesterday. The phone calls start this morning. So I will try to, so these guys have all this technology now, right? There's no more rotary phones. So the team services manager sends out my cell phone number and said, this is Paul Maurice's number. He's going to be calling you. Basically, please don't ghost the guy, right? When the number comes up. So that's my this morning. I got to wait for all the East Coast guys to get out of bed because I get to the rink fairly early. I started on some of the European guys. And the first call, Bob, is absolutely not hockey related. It's a hello. How are you? Where are you? What's your summer like? Tell me about your family. And what I'll do after that is I'll go back and really go through the video of their playoffs. I watched this team play very closely last year, and I thought that they were at times the better team than Tampa in that series. I thought they had a hell of a series last year. So
This was the six game series.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it was a hell of a series. So when I go through the video, then I'll have a better idea of what I think they went through and as a team and then individually. And then I'll make another set of calls probably in 2 or 3 weeks where we'll start talking about hockey individually with the players.
You alluded to the fact that this team needs to change some things. Offensively, you don't really have to change anything. There's plenty of offense there. Defense, goaltending, and maybe more philosophy and attitude. But you understand, you're now going to ask some players. We all know what players like to do. They want to skate. They want to go. They want to score goals. You're now going to have to ask this group as a collective to alter their approach, I would assume. And you're going to demonstrate and observe, show them that if they don't know that you want to win a Stanley Cup, this is how you got to do it. You got to be better at these things. But that isn't going to make you the most popular guy on the ice.
Correct.
When you say that to them.
Correct.
And I assume you've gone through this process previously.
Right.
How do you do it? What kinds of things do you tell them that'll make them turn?
Right. So we will... the first thing we'll do, we're going to use the word add here. We're going to add to our game instead of change. Because if I've scored more goals than any other team in the league, why would we change that? I will get to the offensive part of the game second. So the first is we're not going to change a whole lot about our offensive game. We'll keep it where it is. But we're going to add this kind of idea to our defensive game. When I think back of the teams that beat us in the playoffs and went on to win the Stanley Cup, and I'm talking about some teams with completely different styles of play. So the New Jersey Devils early on 90s to the 2000s, and then the Detroit Red Wings that beat us in 2009, the Pittsburgh Penguins beat us, St. Louis Blues beat us, and those teams all went on to win the Stanley Cup. We're talking about, and you guys know this from watching the incredibly different styles between Pittsburgh Penguins. But one thing was the same. I always left the bench feeling that it wasn't their skill that beat us. They were harder on the puck than we were. And I mean, they were earlier to the confrontation. There was no gap. Like they had, I don't know, 11 Hall of Fame players on their team. But the 2002 Detroit Red Wings, the best hockey team I've ever seen in my life. And I mean, when you go through the list of Hall of Fame players, you're going, of course they beat you. Look at all that skill. But that's not what we couldn't move the puck from the tops of our circles out of our zone. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a skill thing. They pre-gapped you. They took away all your ice. And I would suggest that that's the difference in the Tampa Bay Lightning when they went from, they were, these guys have been a good team for a while, right? They went to the Stanley
Cup.
They also missed the playoffs because if you're relying solely on a rush game and a skill game, the rush game disappears in the playoffs, right? So you, so there has to be something added to your game. And that's what I'm going to look to try to do. And some of it will be systems. Most of it will be attitude. A lot of it will be teaching and video. Is how do I get them to play the hard gap, no easy ice game? And that's what we're going to try to add to our style of play this year.
No, yeah, it's not going to make you that popular because that's hard work, right?
So only if, that would be true, only if points is put ahead of winning.
And that's individual points, you mean?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And that, and maybe, and this will sound funny, but maybe even team points. Right. Mm-hmm. There are, you don't need to win the President's Trophy to win the Stanley Cup. So, but you know what? And you don't fault the guy. We need these players to become very proud, very confident individuals. Right. So we build them to do that. You know, you got to get the guy going. You got to get him feeling good. And then we ask them to subjugate their, those individual possibly goals for the teams. But isn't that basically what happens to all of these teams? Right.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Stamkos comes out in the three hole. You've got point. You got Cirelli over. You know, goes from Steve Campos went from center ice to the wing and then to the three hole, and they are winning Stanley Cups, and that's a leadership sacrifice, right? That's you know this one. This is my favorite one. I'm driving down the road in Detroit in the mid '90s, and I'm coaching in Windsor in Detroit, and I'm listening to a radio station, and they are killing Steve Yzerman. I mean, they're running. He doesn't say anything. He's too quiet. He's got no character. He can't lead. And now they got a statue of the guy. Now there's a statue of the guy outside the building.
Yeah.
And his points didn't go up. His points came down, right? That leadership comes to the front. You sacrifice for the team, you win.
So what you're saying is, you know, bang on. But don't they have to experience the defeats in order to learn that? I mean, the famous story, Paul, and you know this famous story, of the Edmonton Oilers in 1983 walking by the Islanders dressing room after being swept by the Islanders, and every Islander guy has ice. They're not celebrating. Every guy has ice packs on both knees, both shoulders, and the cup sitting in the middle of the room. They said, holy smokes, we didn't pay that price.
Right.
And I mean, look at the price Tampa's paying now just to try to win three in a row.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I had Paul Coffey and Charlie Huddy on my staff, and I love those stories. I mean, Charlie's like, even before that series starts, he's thinking, "Oh, we're going to beat these guys. They're all banged up. Half their team can't even skate. Like they're the stories. You know, everybody talks. They know what's going on. We're going to beat these guys." And then that happens, right? Yeah. So look at it. Kind of, this is the way I look at it, anyway. I get into a bike race with, and I'm going to say Lance Armstrong, but I could really, anybody who owns a bike is going to beat me, but I'm going to go as flat out and as hard as I can on that bike. And so is Lance Armstrong. We're going to do it for 5 minutes. Well, I'm going to be about 300 meters down the road, and he's going to be on the other side of the city. And we both worked just as hard. And we both, if you survey us after, I'm going to say, I worked just as, oh my God, I worked hard. I gave everything I possibly could. It's because my capacity to process that compete, that work, hasn't grown enough. So right. The job here is to increase the capacity to compete. And that has to take time. So you people say, and I agree, you got to lose. All you're talking about is they went as hard as they could this year. They did a great job this year. They had a whole year, but their capacity was where it was. So they hadn't gone through the pain of whether it's losing or investment during the year to increase their capacity to win.
Paul Maurice, the new head coach of the Florida Panthers, by just a couple of days, is with us. We'll take a quick break and come back with more after this. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with the new head coach of the Florida Panthers, Paul Maurice, is with us. I don't know whether this is a question I've asked in the past of people like yourself who've been in this kind of position, but I'm going to ask it a little bit differently. When you were going through the interview process, do you address your relationship with the general manager and your input in the decisions that are made that are theoretically outside the parameters of your job definition? And I think you probably understand what I'm talking about. But Is it important to you to have a say of some significance or a lot of significance in the talent that the organization, the GM specifically, provides for you?
So I'll add the back half of that is yes. So one of the most important questions, you talk about a player, and let's say we can both agree he's a really good player. The most important question then between coach and GM, from my point of view, is where do you see him fitting in our lineup? Mm-hmm. Because you can add skilled guys, right? Oh, he's a great player. He's going to score goals. Okay, that's fine. But where is he going to fit in the lineup? What's your vision? Do you have him playing with Barkov? Because I'm going to have to move a guy off that line if I do, and he's had a pretty good year. The first part of your question is, you know, we use the word fit. Now, look, I've been really lucky. And you guys both know the men I'm talking about. I had Jim Rutherford for 13 years. He's in the Hall of Fame. I had Kevin Cheveldayoff for 9 years. He's got a Stanley Cup ring. Both completely different styles and different views of the game and different communication process with the coach. One of the most important parts of this relationship with Bill and I is we spent an awful lot of time talking about exactly that. How does this work? Right down to the specifics, where I would say something, Bill, I know my own personality. If you've got something that happened in the game, first of all, you're the general manager. You have the right. You can walk in that office any day and say whatever the hell you want. You're the boss. But the second part of that is I know that post-game to the next morning may not be the best time to talk to me. And if you're going to come into my office, anytime, obviously, but between 9 and 9:45, that's also a terrible time because I'm cutting my video for the meeting. And Jimmy was great at it, but he'd pop in and you got, okay, Jim, I got 5 minutes to get this meeting done. I got to get it done. And he was just telling it. So we kind of went through it, Bob, like in that detailed a fashion. This is kind of the way I run my day. And you're the GM, you can, but this is what helps me. The coach really truly needs, in my opinion, or at least me, I need a relationship with a general manager, and it has to, in some ways, be beyond hockey. It has to be, we have to have other kind of interests that we can talk about to get to know each other. The flow of how things are done in terms of players that you're looking at, you know, what do you do when there's a young player that just had 5 points in your American League team, and you got your team and your NHL team is struggling a little bit, and you got a veteran guy in that 3 or that 4 hole that management's probably, you know, he's probably not going to sign here next year. He's getting a little long in the tooth, and they want to bring him up and they want to plan. And I turn around and say, fine, but we've just lost 2 in a row. That guy is blocking shots with his face. He's getting, what I need is more of his attitude in my room, not less. Mm-hmm. And the players love him. And so what do we do with that scenario? So those are the kind of questions that we would talk out. Because they're really important to have a framework of that before you agree to something. And when we were done, that might've been the easiest part, Bob. Like that might've been the part that I was most comfortable with, is that he had a good understanding of what I think I need from the GM. And he made a very clear understanding of his expectations of information, relationship, communication from me as the coach.
Oh, so that was, did he ask how much you want to rely on analytics?
We went through it. I'm like, I kind of love them now. Yeah. I do because it's fun.
Did you always?
No, you know what? I didn't like them because early on, I didn't think they were very good. And clearly, why would they be? Right? We're starting new. I also knew that a lot of the public information early on was based on shot location.
Right.
And that shot location wasn't very accurate at all. Right. I could know because you get your printout of where the league, it's not the league's fault, but every city's different where the shot came from. And you're going, there was no shot from there. It was 10 feet over here. It's a completely different shot. And they didn't have the ability then to weight the shot to decide whether, you know, me coming down the pipe with 3 guys hanging on my back is not the same shot, even though it's the same location, than Barkov coming down with nobody on his back. Those are different things, right? So I didn't care for analytics early. I love looking at it now because it's potentially a great pre-scout tool. Cool. When you want to know what a team is, we just watch games. We have a video guy cuts the pre-scout. We know the team. But you can get more information quickly from sometimes analytics to point you in the right direction to find the video, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, I see. When you were saying that, I had a smile on my face because I still don't understand the subjectivity of a scoring chance. Who? Right. How do you define a scoring chance? A quality scoring chance? I mean, does that change per team? Will that change with you're going to work with new analytics guys than versus the guys you worked with in Winnipeg?
Well, it absolutely is subjective, because when prior to analytics, we all did scoring chances, right? That's how we did our video.
Sure.
Everybody, and we did A, B, and C chances. But if you asked us what an A chance, a B chance, or a C chance was, you would get absolutely no agreement from anyone.
That's ever. Right.
So it's completely subjective to your own team. And that's a little bit of a race then, right? There's a little bit of a race for the predictive value of these models. And now we've got five people way smarter than me grinding on that. And we had it in Winnipeg. They got a great program there in Winnipeg that, you know, and we all keep it quiet. We don't tell anybody about it, but they've got some really smart people there, and they're coming up with a new way to look at the game. So I look at all that and then I forget about it, right? Like, no, I want it to help me point my eyes to a potential place.
Sure.
And then it's about humans and people and those kind of things.
How important are assistant coaches to you? I assume very.
And, yeah, critically, because I'm trying to, you know what? I'm trying not to be the same coach I was last year, right?
And why?
I try not to,
why?
Well, first of all, I haven't won. So I will just say, I'm not good enough yet. I got to get better. That's a simple way for me to decide how I got to come to the rink every day. So part of this is, okay, you have your process, your work process. How is it that you can become more productive with a finite amount of time? The better your assistant coaches are, the more you can offload some of the time costs that you have, and the more time you can spend building relationships. And that is an area that we're all trying to get better at, understand the new generation of players have more contact. They're used to it. Honest to God, when I came into the league, like the coaches and the players, like we swore at each other, but we didn't necessarily talk. Like there was a major division between the two. And maybe that in part was I was 28 and I wanted to make sure everybody took me seriously. So I walked around with a scowl on my face the entire time. Maybe that had something to do with it. But now we're in a completely different world. And in truth, fellas, I think the COVID experience may have brought that to light for me, because it's the first time I started to think about mental health for me and for my players, where I really started asking these guys, how are you doing? How are you handling this? Because I know that it wasn't easy for me. Like I kind of started to hate the game there in the Canadian division with no fans. That wasn't fun.
No.
So I'm trying to evolve here a little bit, where I can get the right people on the staff to handle more of the details than the X's and O's, or at least the procurement of video to prep the team. And then I can get out of my office a little bit more and just make sure. And they're not always gentle or kind conversations, but they need to be effective and often.
What did you learn about yourself from December 17th to yesterday?
Oh, my goodness. That my wife probably loves road trips more than I appreciated. God bless her.
That's the famous line. We've been married 40 years, and there's 20 of them I've been away.
Right. In the words of Kevin McCarthy, the great assistant coach, the toughest part of training camp is not squealing your tires on the way out of the driveway. That's a really good question. And I would tell you that I found out that there are a lot more things going on in this world than I ever paid attention to. And some of that's just, if you take 4 or 5 days where you don't think about hockey and you're at Lake of the Woods, this is a beautiful country, right? Like you when you can actually be present where you are, because you're not thinking about the next job, the next game, what do you got to do next year? Or you're, for me, still hanging on to the anger about the end of the last year, right? I get a 4-day break there in the middle where I'm between hate and anger over the last and enthusiasm and fear of the next, right? I had a lot more really good days. Kelly Rudy's got a picture on his backdrop right in the Zoom, and it says more good days on
right.
it. Yeah. And I used to watch that and think, that's a great idea, man. I'd like to have more good days. And I had some pretty, I you know what? I had some tough days too early on. It was hard, but I had a lot of really, really good days too.
Hey, so Bob and I talked about this yesterday a little bit with Brian Lawton. A third of the coaches, I'm going to put Montreal and Edmonton in this too, because they fired guys during the regular season. A third of the league has changed coaches this year.
Right.
A third. Correct. That's more than I remember. And you and I have been around this thing a long time. What goes through your mind as you're in your fraternity? You know, one of your best friends, Pete DeBoer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard. It's not easy.
No. And God forbid that we ever complain about our jobs, right? Then that's the other part of it. It's an honor to work in the NHL, and I'm not going to get out here and complain about it. But it, what's interesting is I think Pete thinks he did one of his best jobs in his entire career this year. They hit almost 500 man games lost to injury, yeah. and they yeah. were right there. So he's almost most proud of this season because he, man, you know, keeping those guys in the fight with all the injuries that they had. I think the numbers probably from a start of a season with fully, it's probably about eight guys a year, I think is probably what you get to, four or five guys in December, four or five guys get it in the after the season ends. I'm going to get kicked out of the association for saying this. I believe in the coach's window.
Yeah,
I do. I believe you push as hard as you can. And if you're not winning a Stanley Cup or you're not or you're not right there, there comes a time when they just need a different voice. I do believe that. Now, do they need it after two or three years? Some pretty fine coaches who had been to the conference finals a bunch of times are now out of work. But here's the sidekick to this. I hope this sounds okay. We're also getting paid way, way more money than we used to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's true, right? And because of that becomes the responsibility, and there's even greater pressure if the owner and the GM, and they're allotting you this amount of resources, they want maybe a quicker payback. So yeah. I do think there's been a balance. Yeah, we're probably the expiration date on all of us got shortened by a year or two, it seems, over the last couple of years. But you know what? None of us are going to starve. We're going to be okay.
I hearken back to 1976, the year before the Toronto Blue Jays were launched, and there were a handful of employees there, and I happened to be one of them at the time. And Pete Bavese was the president of the club. And at the beginning of the year, we got chatting in his office one day, and he said, I'm going to do 200 chicken dinners this year to sell baseballs in this town, to sell tickets. And at the end of the year, I don't remember, I asked, or he told me, he said he did like 247. So he did more than he said he was going to do. You've been in that environment before, but you've also been in an environment where you didn't have to. Toronto, you didn't have to do any chicken dinners. Winnipeg, you didn't have to do chicken dinners. Hartford, for sure. Carolina.
In two cities. Remember, he started in the first year in Greensboro.
Maybe twice. Right? Where... And I'm asking a coach a question that usually goes to the president or maybe the general manager. I don't know whether you do any chicken dinners, but yeah. Where is Florida in terms of fan base and getting really ingrained in the environment?
So I'm going to say, Bob, here's a little fight. I think it's funny. I probably survived and am coaching today because I actually coached an NHL team in three different cities, but no longer for 2 years at a time, right? So I'm 2 years in Hartford, 2 years in Greensboro, and then we get to Raleigh, Carolina. If we had been in the same city, I'd have gotten fired way sooner, right? So they didn't get sick of me. I just moved town, right? Took the team and left. So that's how I survived that. In the history of this team and in this franchise, right, I think they've had 18 coaches. They've had a bunch of different ownership and kind of different management groups. And I think at times that it makes it tough to get traction. So you look at Carolina and, you know, we had plenty of empty seats clearly in Greensboro, but it took a while to build that. And even there was a little bit of a, you know, we went to the Stanley Cup final. I get fired. Lavi comes in. They win the Stanley Cup. He gets fired. I come in. We go to the and we miss the playoffs in between those years. Yeah. Right?
That's right.
And then I go to the conference finals and then they have this long drought. Right. So they go, I leave and some good coaches come in, had nothing to do with that, but they missed the playoffs for 9 years. And now they've built something. And I think truly Roddy Brind'Amour is a star coach. This guy is outstanding at what he does. And he has a big impact on what's going on there. But now they're building to the point that I think it's sustainable. So it has to be year over year over year. And in order to do that in a non-traditional market, you have to have a very forgiving, now very wealthy owner to help you build those years.
Of course.
When you're not getting the payback, to invest that so that we can put a product. So maybe our team has to be, you know, we can't survive four or five off years, right? Maybe people, you know, you got 24 straight years in Detroit of making the playoffs. You can probably sustain some tough years. They get it. We're coming anyway. But in this market, until that idea is established, It takes a tremendous amount of an investment from an owner to commit to something like that, and they have it here, right? So our job now and the opportunity for us is that idea of a destination franchise, because you do have an incredible climate. You know, there's more kind of US-born players now. It's not just all Canadian guys. There's lots of US-born players. So you're living in the same country that you were born in. Got a very forgiving tax structure. We've got a really interesting lifestyle down here. As we said, it's pretty nice down here. But the big one, you got a chance to win. And when those things come together, just think of the years with the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? There were some lean years there back when Torts and I used to meet under the stanchions, and the only way that game was on TV was on the Jumbotron. nobody saw those games except for me and Torts. It took a long time. And now we believe, and that's part of the responsibility of coming here as the coach. You have to be a part of selling the game for sure, but making sure the product on the ice is sellable and interesting to the fans.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating journey. I know you seem reinvigorated.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's good to see. And we couldn't be happier for you. I think you know that. And we wish you the best of luck there. It'll be a most interesting journey to see what this team looks like at this time next year.
Absolutely.
We wish you nothing but the best. And thanks a lot for taking a little time for us. We really appreciate it.
John, thanks. But they're always great conversations. They could just keep going on. I enjoy it very much. Great questions. And thanks for having me, guys. It's been a while, so I enjoyed it. Thank you.
We'll stay in touch for sure.
Excellent.
All the best. Paul Maurice, we'll be back after this. Our thanks once again to a really good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Not a better guy in the business, I don't
know. So how about this now? You got John Cooper in Tampa and Paul Maurice in Florida.
Two great coaches and two great people.
And two of the best media savvy interviews.
Oh, yeah.
To help the game in a place where the sun shines too much for a hockey market at times.
They've solved that problem.
Tampa, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
But they haven't solved the problem in Florida.
No, there's too many things to do in Florida. Where the rink is doesn't help. But you know what? Winning will help.
Winning will help. Yeah. But we got into us. I tried to get into some of the conversation of the chicken dinners, you know, and Paul didn't really answer that question.
Well, except that, I mean, this is not an expansion team. You know, this team's been around since 1992 or 93.
No, but you have something to sell now, John. You have a team that won, you know, had the best record in the most points in the regular season, and a team that can score like crazy. You have things to sell, and arguably you have more to sell right now than you do when the team first arrives. I think you got to push this. You got to sell this, and whether it's him or Zito or whoever it is that does it, remains to be seen. Well,
and there's one person that agrees with you, Bob, and that's Vinny Viola, the owner, because that's why they made this change, because they know how close they are, and they know they needed someone of Maurice's experience to give that extra dimension of experience for this hockey club. Because not a knock at Andrew Brunette, but let's remember, Brunette was thrown into a really tough situation. You know, he didn't start the season as the head coach, and then Joel Quenneville got let go because of the controversy around the Chicago scenario.
Oh, I know.
And then Andrew took them all the way through to the second round.
But you know,
he was supposed to be an assistant coach for Joel Quenneville.
What occurs to me is this: you bring Joel Quenneville or Paul Maurice, and they are of relatively comparable stature in terms of their history as coaches. Both very experienced, both very good.
Joel's resume is a bit better.
Agreed. He had a team in Chicago. He won three Stanley Cups with him, right?
Correct.
But what does that matter in Florida? How many people in Florida that you want to get into that rink know who Paul Maurice is, knew who Joel Quenneville was? One of the things we didn't talk about was media. Like, I'm literally told that the major newspapers in South Florida
don't travel a reporter anymore.
Barely cover the team.
Yeah.
Cover the team.
Well, here's the thing. Joel Quenneville did not go there, and it was Dale Tallon that brought him there. Joel Quenneville did not go there just on his reputation as a winner. Joel Quenneville, because he's a really good coach. And the same things can be said for Paul Maurice. He's going to, his success won't be measured in media interviews, won't be measured in press conferences after games. His success will be in wins and losses and going to the Stanley Cup final and winning. That's what it's all about. It's not about, as much as it's a really nice ad, he's savvy, Bob. I mean, this guy is as erudite as anybody in any sport when it comes to dealing with the media. But that's not really why he's there. He's there to win,
period. Yeah, but Paul Maurice dealt with 20, 30 media people every day in Toronto.
Same
he
in
probably
Winnipeg.
Dealt with 10 or 12 in Winnipeg, a very small market. He's now going to probably deal with one. He's going to have, I don't know how many news conference, post-game press conferences he's going to have. Well, and if he does.
Well, he has one. He'll have one every night. He will do one every night.
I'll bet you there will be times where the visiting media clearly outweighs the local media.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And maybe on a regular basis.
Hey, let's remember too, Bob, Florida is in a division in the National Hockey League with Montreal and Toronto. So,
well, exactly.
And obviously the Stanley Cup finalists in Tampa Bay. This is a tough division to get into in order to try to prove yourself one more time. But it was great to see Paul. He's got the glint in his eye again. And these guys, when they love to coach, it'll be fascinating to watch.
I couldn't be happier for him. He's one. You know, it's tough to root for coaches, but especially in our business where we have to be, you know, honest. But Paul Maurice is a guy that, since I've gotten to know him, I root for him. And I couldn't be happier. And he seems very happy and optimistic. So, and he's going to live in South Florida. Could be worse. We got to go. Y'all have yourselves a swell weekend. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. See ya.